This is The Deep Dive with Brooke Spector.
This is The Deep Dive, and I am Brooke Spector, as usual. It's Friday mornings, and we're doing the politicians thing today. In case anybody hasn't noticed, there is a national election and a provincial one in South Africa on the 29th of May. And so today we'll talk to a few politicians and we'll find out what makes them tick. I mean, you, as listeners, as interested citizens, you've probably already read the manifestos and you've seen television debates and posters everywhere. It's helpful if we can figure out a little bit more about the persons. And so this morning, one of our guests is Mmusi Maimane, who is now the head of Build One South Africa, BOSA. And he's part of a younger generation in politics, somebody who came into prominence within this century as opposed to last century. And he's already had an extensive career in a previous political party, and he left and has now founded his own. He's had various posts and campaigns at the local, the provincial, the national level, university trained in commerce and theology. And it's a delight to have you here. I know this is really the crunch time for you. There's just a few days left before it all gets counted. If you were to sum up yourself, one phrase that explains what brought you into the world of politics, as opposed to, say, business or the media or science or farming, what would be the thing that most inspired you? What's the key for you in this?
Great to be here. Thank you so much for having me. And I think probably the phrase that I've stuck closest to is activist. Now, I can appreciate that someone who's lived long enough will remember the term in historical terms and sometimes got negative connotations, right? When you call people activists, they can be terrorists, they can be a whole lot of things. But I like to define it as someone who identifies a challenge in their community, in their society, and fights for it and takes deliberate action, therefore makes them an activist in that sense. And so my foray into politics didn't begin because I wanted to be a politician. In fact, I still hate the title. And I think in many ways it began because I saw injustice. I saw a woman who was digging a hole in her garden and building her own toilet. I thought, that's wrong. It's an injustice to be living in South Africa like that. I thought, let me go take up the fight on her behalf. I stood then as a ward councillor because I realized the city is the only one who can build toilets. No NGO, no philanthropic organization can build bulk sewage infrastructure. It's what governments are set up for. And so we fought in that issue. Even when I joined the DA, I wouldn't say I joined it as an ideologue in the sense that I was an activist for libertarianism in that sense, in the way they put it. I believe in the rights for individuals and freedoms, and I wanted to fight for the delivery of services in South Africa that so many felt left out. And even now in starting Build One South Africa, it's not any job, it's not anything. You'll recall we started One South Africa movement, which was the predecessor, and during COVID, we thought that it was important for us to fight to when newly unemployed people, as a function of COVID, we needed to help those. That's why we distributed over 1.1 million meals. And when education was an injustice for children who were left out, we thought we'll build a blended learning center during COVID where young people could come and do maths and science and improve their lessons for that. And now even in politics, I don't do it for the position. I do it because I think this country can do with a movement and a political party that stands for all South Africans and fight for that dream. So in some ways, yes, the scoreboard matters, but ultimately what matters is the activism we've done for society, for that's all that will count, whatever position you occupy.
Everybody in their life has a person, a figure, an individual who has been a trigger for them, an inspiration, somebody that they wish to emulate. Who's yours?
You know, I think because of similar common religious backgrounds, I would think it would be someone like Martin Luther King. When you look at the life of Martin Luther King, you see a civil rights activist, but you also see someone who who had a vision for a society that didn't yet exist and found themselves at a time in history where he didn't come from a big church in that sense, yet his impact has been felt throughout generations. And I always just think to myself, it's not in this instance, it's a, you know, Bossa and anything that we've started have always been entities that are not like the NC or whatever. But we would want for our impact to be resonant over periods of time. I've become more and more, as I read more of his writings, about how here was someone who was able to take his own faith and let it translate across faiths and across races and across gender, because there's someone who fought for justice. So I draw deep inspiration from someone like him. And I think many others did, because the period of time where civil rights movements were being fought and being waged, unlike perhaps the contrasting figure like Malcolm X, I thought Martin Luther King had an appreciation that for there to be a multiracial movement, blacks and whites needed to coexist. And I think sometimes we live in a world not of the and, but of the either or. And so I'm always inspired by figures like that. And so he happens to be one of those for me.
This is The Deep Dive. I'm Brooke Spector, your host. Today's program is Politicians. Even though my guest, Musi Maimani, says he's not keen on the word politician, that's the world he's operating in right now. And we'll be right back after this message.
This is The Deep Dive with Brooke Spector.
This is The Deep Dive, and I'm Brooke Spector, your host, of course, and my guest right now is Musi Maimane, running in the election that South Africa faces shortly as the head of the party he has built, Build One South Africa. He was talking about the man who inspired him in many ways, Martin Luther King. One of the things, of course, that strikes me when I read more deeply into what King had written. And he was not simply, as you say, just as you say, a civil rights leader. He had a larger and a broader vision, and it was rooted in many ways in a larger historical tradition of protest in favor of social action for a larger sense of justice. Now, it's probably clear to you that you're not going to win with your party. You're not going to win a majority of all the voters in South Africa in this election. Who knows about the future? But what would you, if you had a guiding hand in a coalition government that actually was in charge, what would be the most important policies you would want enacted right at the outset, right from day one? You'd stand up and say, today we're going to start and we're going to do X. What would it be?
I worked in coalitions in 2016 to 2019. That's what elected Herman Mashaba, and that's what kept him in office, right? And those coalitions worked. And there are some key things that make coalitions work. The first is it needs to be predicated on a plan, not on a personality or on a position. And therefore, we look at the following 10 things going into a national coalition. First is, we need to fix Eskom. We need to keep the lights on. No economy is going to work without that. And I'm committed to fixing our baseload by introducing SMRs, so safe nuclear, and transitioning from fossil energy towards sustainable energy. And that's by creating a broader grid that includes some of the SADC countries so that we can benefit from gas, hydro, and ultimately wind technology. I think it's important that we fix logistics. That's about breaking Transnet into its two component parts and making sure that it's got a port functions. And second to that, ensuring that passengers can move to and from places of work, particularly in passenger rail. So it's very clear the fact that once we fail, that it becomes expensive for people to get to work. The third dynamic of that is that I want to devolve policing to regional communities so that we have a combination of both regional and national police. This way you can increase the force at a local ground, but you can also increase the intelligence so that you can arrest the criminals. No one is going to invest in an unsafe place. Fourthly, we were very clear about the fact that we need a regime that builds broader infrastructure, and I think everyone can agree on that, which is notionally the fact that along four components. You know, obviously logistics I've spoken to, energy I've spoken to, but the digital broadband infrastructure becomes crucial, because what we want in South Africa is for every citizen to be a digital citizen, so that they're able to participate in a global economy that's growing in that space. And then and then lastly, fixing all our road infrastructure. This is about making sure that the movement of goods in our country and cities like Johannesburg don't have to suffer from potholes, etc. Because if you keep that in place, you can make sure that goods can move not only here in South Africa, but we can build better infrastructure for SADC regions so that the export markets can work and we can move goods there. And then thirdly, I'm passionate about education. You know, I think that the more young people are passing at 30%, the more we confine them to the doldrums of unemployment. So let's improve the fact that young people can move from 30 to 50% pass mark. Let's incentivize the best teachers, pay them well. Let's ensure that ultimately every child who starts can read for meaning by the age of 10. And let's look after the child in the womb by ensuring that there's a maternal support for pregnant mothers, so that no child is born stunted, so they can stay in school, right? And of course, the other incentives are about, because I can't stand for Build One South Africa. That's not just a kumbaya, let's hold hands moment, but it is equally so about, let's bring races together, but let's also bring economies together. So I've proposed a 220 billion rands investment into township economies, so that we can ensure that not only is there a job in every home, there's a job closer to home, so that mothers and fathers can work closer to home. I think there's a psychological benefit to the next generation of kids when you do that, because it helps them. It helps them stay in school, etc. And then, maybe the last one I'd highlight would be the fact that as South Africa, we need to be clear about what kind of leadership we want in government. And it's got to be ethical and it's got to be incorruptible. And a capability of that state is important. So to that effect, we've proposed interventions where you minimize the size of cabinet, but you also ensure, more crucially, that the most ethical leaders are elected. And that's why I think my vision for a grand coalition of the opposition, as it were, emanates from. Because one, when you have a grand coalition, you don't capture the state, which is one party dominance often delivers. Secondly, you usher in transition, which is post-liberation. Thirdly, you pick the best from all the parties so that cabinet is strengthened. You agree on a plan and you ultimately ensure that the appointments of senior bureaucrats in government are people of high stature that can come from outside government and various spaces, so that government becomes a place where it's a place of excellence to work and not a place where people feel they can get through. So this as a plan is what predicates how we negotiate. So I'm not interested in just replacing the ANC and governing worse than the ANC. We've got to be clear that the best thing we can do is, if we do replace the ANC, we've got to govern better. So, and I've had experience in doing that, and I can bring South Africans together.
That's that whole collection of points seems thoroughly grounded in reality, rather than merely being aspirational. I don't want to trivialize it or minimize what you've said at all, but things like fixing the rail infrastructure, fixing the roads, digitalizing infrastructure, those are essential, but they're not sufficient, if you see what I mean. But I think much of what you're arguing for is rooted in the idea of encouraging economic growth in the country. And there seem to be two different ideas about economic growth. One of them is that the government will decide the sectors that growth will happen in, and money will go to those sectors and something will happen. And the other version is freeing up the sectors so that individuals, entrepreneurs, individual innovators, organizations who aren't government will begin to find places to spread their wings and to create more and more economic opportunities and growth. I think even your idea of one job per household, every job, every house a job, is rooted in the idea of moving in that second version. Am I saying that fairly?
Yeah. And I do think that capable governments figure out the best regulatory environment to ensure that there is a job in every home. So I always think to myself, forget what the law is about. Ask the simple question, will it at the end of the day deliver a job? That's the only question you got to answer. Whether it's labor law, whether it's fiscal policy, whether it's education policy, that's got to be the basic answer, right? And so we've got to look at the way of eradicating blockages in the system. I never like it when people say, well, government must get out the way, because I think whilst I understand the impulse that that's coming from, it is unrealistic in a country such as ours with a high burden of welfare to simply just say government must get out the way. Actually, in some ways, what government does is that it's to ensure that citizens never fall below the absolute poverty line. And so programs around welfare, around support for the poor, become important so that more and more people can participate. And maybe to this point, it might be good to even think about this idea of national health insurance, because in this instance, I do think that, you know, we've got an overemphasis on government by ensuring that we want to introduce a national health insurance, a government that is incapable, historically has proven so. Thirdly, a government that is fairly on the verge of, I don't want to call it bankruptcy, as our government is fiscally tight. For every rand that comes in here, no money is available for investment. So this is going to be a scheme that cripples. And so as a radical centrist myself, I think that actually, health insurance can benefit from being a hybrid system where there's a public health insurance and a private health insurance that citizens are entitled to purchase from either one, and ensuring that ultimately in a hybrid system, people are, particularly poor citizens, if you live in Limpopo and you live in a poor health community, you can literally go to a private doctor and the state will underwrite that. But also if you're a private medical aid holder and you are looking for hepatology, then I would suggest that you go to Groote Schuur, which is perhaps a public hospital, but what your private health insurance would do was pay for that. So a hybrid model seems to me the best pathway forward, and ensuring that the available assets are being built and strengthened. So in that instance, I'm not one of those people who are like, state get out the way, private sector get out the way. I think a public-private partnership, a hybrid model can work in health insurance, for example. Whereas the ANC, as an example, believes that the state is the answer and solution to everything.
What is your favorite food? If you had to sit down to a meal and it could be instantly whatever you wanted it to be, what would it be? And the other is, when you have spare time, I'm not sure you do, but when you do, what is your hobby? What relaxes and builds you? But quickly, because I know you have to move.
Yeah, no, on the second, maybe first, I run. I've taken up running since COVID. That's been fun. And I play football. And it's been crazy too. But those are the two things I enjoy. And I love to watch football and run, of course. And I'm a reader. I've just written a book myself, which is quite a brave thing. So that's been fascinating. But as far as food is concerned, I'm a very boring foodie. I hate to disappoint. I'm not one of those who is like, I think probably I've changed diets recently, so I'm eating a lot more fish. So if there was a good meal to have, I think I'd probably have a bit of fish and some chips, but I'm a very boring person. And I'm not even adventurous fish, very down to earth kind of hake type thing, not prawns or anything fancy like that. I'm a very boring person. And my wife, who would probably hate me for saying this, she doesn't like cooking. So I think it worked out perfectly well, because she could, anything she puts before me, I always think, she in her own words, our choice of dinner tonight is take it or leave it.
It's on the plate, finish it, be done. We have been speaking with Musi Maimane of Build One South Africa, who runs, plays football, is a boring eater, and is a self-described radical centrist. I know you have to go. You have other appointments in that what is now the last stretch of the race to the 29th. But I appreciate your sharing time with us this morning. Thank you very much, and good luck.